had one other question, really kind of for Margo, I guess, more than anybody else. Why couldn't we structure our existing sentences by looking at them, deciding what one-third meant, and then merely shift the numbers so that one-third became three-quarters? Wouldn't that also bring us into compliance with federal concerns? It's just a numbers game. I mean, you could easily shift and say, I'm sentencing you to, if we're going to do one-third, you could sentence them to 15 years, and they would be serving five.
Right.
But to make that three-quarters, you'd sentence them to 7.5 or something.
Mr. Chairman, I agree that there are several ways that you could accomplish the same thing. We could say, right now we say I sentence you to 15 years with five suspended, and the person's actually going to end up serving about six and perhaps less than that. You could change that around and say I sentence you to 11 years, and of that I'm suspending five, and you will have a four-year period of supervised release that, or you know, what could be parole, but it can be suspended, and you can do the time incarcerated instead if there are any disciplinary problems. You can front end it, you can back end it, but it does the least tweaking to our system to do it this way, and as you know from your judicial experience, when it comes to the criminal system, the less dramatic we get in our changes, the more we can predict what will happen.
Well, I understand how we're trying to accommodate basically the way the bureaucracy is currently set up for calculating all of these people as they come in and stay within our system. What would be wrong with a system that basically said, I am sentencing you to 15 years, if in fact you miss act out during your term of imprisonment, you may find additional years tacked onto that, and that person will actually do 15 years. In other words, why are we rewarding good conduct up front and assuming it when most other penal institutions put a person in prison assuming good conduct and then punish them? It becomes more of a stick than a carrot.
Mr. Chairman, the difference between a good time state and a bad time state. And in a bad time state, the presumption is you're not getting that time off and you have to earn it. But in fact, most states in the union are good time states. The Truth in Sentencing program has caused some of them to flip and become bad time states. Same end result, just a different philosophical perception of it.
Well, I got you. The only other, it's not related to this really, but the only other question I had is, why should we not, for those individuals who are utilizing public defender services, especially, but for anyone for that matter who brings an appeal of a criminal case, why don't we just hold them in prison and give them no credit for time served during the period of time the appeal is pending, so they have something invested in the suit, so that we get rid of all of these specious suits and specious habeas corpus pleas? And literally, we would then have only those that people felt were bona fide enough that they were willing to put in their time to have the matter heard.
Interesting proposal.
You might think about that a lot. It works well in some other countries, and they have very, very, their total turnaround time is 3 months for an appeal of a criminal sentence, where we're looking at probably 2.5, 3 years. So,
ready for a motion?
Yeah, I certainly am.
I would move Senate Bill 67, CS Judiciary, with the appropriate fiscal notes from committee with individual recommendations.
Was there anyone else who wished to discuss this bill before I move it from committee? Okay, thank you very much. Is there any objection to the motion? No objection. The motion passes. The bill will move from committee with individual recommendations. Where is Senator Donnelly? Lehman.
Mr. Chairman, how long do you plan to go on this bill?
I intend to go for about another 15 minutes tops. I need to be in my office a little after 3:30.
Are you going to try to move 120?
I think we moved 120.
We did.
Oh, you did?
We already did,
okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you going to offer the amendments for Senator Lehman?
Yes.
Please do so. You have them in a packet? Is that what number one through? We have a new packet. The new packets are not in your file. They're next to you on the table.
Taylor, you should like this bill. We killed a lot of trees for it.
We did. All Canadian. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Mike Pauley, staff to sponsor Senator Lehman. Before you, you should have a packet of, I believe it actually adds up to 24 amendments. These amendments come from various sources. Some of them are suggested by the sponsor. Some of them have been suggested by industries in the state that are affected by the bill, which the sponsor has reviewed and is recommending to the committee. Some of the other amendments were drafted by the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Department of Law, and the sponsors reviewed them and recommend them favorably. Many of them are of a technical nature.
Let's just whip through them.
Walk through them one by one.
First one, certified mail return receipt is the subject.
That's right.
Second one.
Okay.
We're looking at a reasonable time. You've stated no longer than 90 days instead of 30, and that was because people felt they wanted it also limited to give them an adequate opportunity.
That's correct. And I understand that the Department of Environmental Conservation is not opposed to that.
Yeah, they didn't have any opposition number one either, did they?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Number three, a person claiming the privilege has the burden of establishing as opposed to the word proving.
That's right.
That's Department of Law's request.
It's largely semantic.
Okay, number four, deleting the word only. What impact does that have?
The specific impact is that it's referring to under what circumstances you could disclose the audit report but not waive the privilege. And the use of the word only, it reads, disclosure of the part of the audit report if it's made only to address or correct a matter raised by the environmental or health and safety audit. And the concern, and mainly from industry's part, is that this unnecessarily restricts the ability to share the audits. I mean, there could be valid reasons other than simply fixing the noncompliance that you might want to share that audit report.
Okay, number four.
Okay, or number five?
Five.
Okay. Number five is a clarification that the term legal representative was too vague, that we wanted to, because that could imply someone who just has power of attorney, but that we wanted to actually specify that it's a lawyer or someone who works for that lawyer, clerk, paralegal, something of that nature. Amendment number six. This is simply language that states that if you share your audit report with someone else under terms of a confidentiality agreement, that anyone who violates that agreement is liable for damages. It was included in the original bill, was introduced for some reason. It was deleted in the committee substitute, and I believe that deletion was inadvertent.
So without that, there'd be no teeth in the disclosure.
That's our understanding, right.
Number seven.
This relates to a statement that all parties agree that the privilege described in this bill does not is not shielding underlying facts. In other words, if a regulatory agency goes to, say, a mining operation and says, we would like to know if we have reason to believe that you exceeded your allowable discharges on such and such a date into this stream on your property, and we'd like to see, your records of whether or not you exceeded the allowable discharges. I mean, that's just an objective fact. I mean, what were your discharges on that day? So that information in and of itself, you can't claim privilege for. Now, if there was a report that analyzed, why that discharge exceeded the allowable threshold, who was responsible, maybe the machinery was not operating correctly, those are the kind of things that would be in an audit report that would be protected by the privilege, not the mere fact that something happened.
Number eight.
Okay. Number eight relates to privilege for information relating to pipeline tariffs. Last year, the Senate Finance Committee amended this bill.
That's just to keep the proprietary stuff from being disclosed.
Right. That's correct. Okay. Amendment number nine simply provides that that privilege and immunity can be overcome if the violation in question poses an imminent or present threat of injury. And this is something that the EPA has stated that when they're reviewing state audit laws to see if they meet federal requirements, that this is one of the things they look for. So we thought it was a prudent measure.
Okay.
Amendment number 10 simply adds administrative hearing officer in addition to the courts. So when there are hearings to determine whether or not privilege can be overcome or immunity can be overcome,
they can appoint a hearing officer.
It includes administrative hearing officer.
11?
Correct. 11 is just a semantic change. You know, it's employing the term owner or operator instead of person, because owner in terms of who can claim the privilege. Number 12. Number 12 is simply a wording change that talks about what parts of an audit report must be shared with an agency if they request it. And the current language talks about relevant portions of the audit report that are necessary to determine that corrective action has been identified. And it was our feeling that that language was somewhat vague, and so what we've done is replaced it with language that was in the original bill as it was introduced.
Number 13.
Amendment number 13, this is another amendment that's designed to try to address EPA's concerns. It conditions immunity and simply says that immunity can, you can be denied immunity if you don't promptly initiate efforts to discontinue, abate, or mitigate conditions that are likely to cause imminent injury.
14.
Okay. Number 14. Number 14 pertains to the notice requirement for audits. There's a concern among the affected industries that if you provided notice of intent to do an audit, that that would essentially amount to an invitation to the agency to come in and do an inspection. This provision of the bill simply specifies that an agency can't schedule an inspection or another investigation based solely upon the receipt of a notice that someone's going
to
be doing
an
audit.
They have to have other cause.
That's right.
Okay. 15.
Again, this is another thing that simply says that notwithstanding the immunity sections of the bill, that there's nothing in here will prevent a regulatory agency from seeking injunctive relief or issuing an emergency order in situations involving imminent and substantial danger.
Sure. Okay. 16.
Number 16, this deals with the issue of repeat violators, that if someone is a repeat violator, they're not going to be eligible for immunity under this bill. But there's a concern that some of the industries that operate in the state have facilities located in other states, and which, you know, a facility in Texas might have the same violations that a facility in Alaska is claiming immunity for. Okay. Line number 17, or excuse me, amendment number 17, this is just a grammatical clarification, no substantive.
18.
Number 18, the word offense is deleted and replaced with violation because we understand that that's the language that the Code of Civil Procedure uses in Alaska. And also the term lack of prevention system is deleted
language,
because of vagueness. Okay.
19, that's a whole new section.
19, this deals with economic benefit, that if the noncompliance that an owner or operator claims has caused the company to, they've gained an economic benefit from that noncompliance, that they can be assessed a fine that appropriately reflects the economic benefit they realize from being in noncompliance.
Good. That's better.
Okay. Number 20 is simply stating that
you can electronically
file the audit disclosure.
21
simply adds language to the definition of what might be included in an audit report. This was language that was included in the original bill, but which I think it was inadvertently deleted in the CS, and so we're adding it back in.
22.
Amendment number 22. is adding definition, adding material to the definition of confidential self-evaluation and analysis to specify that if an auditor does interviews with current or employees or field notes and things of that nature, that that's included in the definition of what would be privileged information in the audit.
Yeah, that would be the interviewer's words are provided that immunity, not necessarily the documents of the person that he interviewed are immune. The reason I mention that is he goes to see somebody that's an expert in some field, works with him to find something out. That person's documentation and stuff is still subject to the same disclosure if the department requested it. It's only the person who went out and did the audit themselves. It's their, in other words, their work, the auditor's work product is immune. The person that he talked to is not necessarily.
That's correct.
Okay.
I think that's the correct answer.
23.
23 is simply an amendment to the definition of department to delete the Department of Health and Social Services.
Okay. 24.
24 is simply defining the words intentionally, knowingly, and recklessly, and adopting the definitions that are in the criminal code for those.
You'd think we wouldn't have to do that on every bill, wouldn't you? Thank you very much. Were there questions that committee members had on specific amendments? Senator Pierce.
I don't have a question on a specific amendment. It's my understanding that this amendment package represents amendments from both the departments, particularly DEC, as we got in testimony from Mr. Dare, but also perhaps some from the affected businesses within the state. Has the Department of Environmental Conservation had an opportunity to see those that were brought forward by businesses, and have they agreed that they have they agreed with that language?
Right. I can tell you that all these amendments were, I faxed them to the Department of Environmental Conservation yesterday. I have a note from Janice Adair this morning, and I don't know if she's here to testify or not, but they have concerns with Amendments 7 and 8, but that was my understanding that, you know, with the exception of Amendments 7 and 8, they do not have any serious objections to any of the other amendments that we're recommending here today.
It's my intention that we would, the chair would entertain a motion to adopt all 24. If any member has objection to any specific amendment within that package, I'll withdraw that from the motion. We'll take that up individually.
Mr. Chairman, I intend to object to Amendments 7 and 8. Janice Adair had to drop off the teleconference.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Cut off at 3:20, so
thank you very much.
Comments.
Okay, Chair would entertain a motion to adopt Amendments 1 through 24, accepting therefrom Amendments 7 and 8.
So moved.
It has been moved by Senator Pierce. Is there objection to adopting 1 through 24, deleting, of course, Amendments 7 and 8? There being no objection, those 22 are now adopted. Chair would entertain a motion on Amendment number 7.
Chairman, I would move.
It's been moved by Senator Miller. There is objection from Senator Ellis. Discussion as concerns Amendment number 7. I don't know much about it, Senator Ellis, if you would go right ahead.
Today.
I was intending to, and I realize that there are significant additional amendments the department wished to take up, but I felt that before it could be heard in finance, it would give the parties an additional period of time to work out such compromises, both Department of Labor and Department of Environmental Conservation.
It's just that on Amendment 7 and 8, I respect Ms. Adair's opinions, and I'm, you know, I'd like to hear her comments on this before we take a vote.
Is there anybody else here who can respond on behalf of the department? Yes, if you would, please. The motion is on Amendment number 7, and for your information, that amendment deletes the reference to the words objective facts and inserts, that's all it does. It just deletes the words objective facts.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Marie Sansone. I'm with the Department of Law. The inclusion of the term objective facts was very important to us. We had, we understood also. Exception for objective facts was necessary.
Can you give me an example of how you could write a report, a self-audit report, and not make reference to objective facts that make up your report? I mean, otherwise, we're only shielding reports of conjecture.
Mr. Chairman, the portion of the report that was to be privileged concerned of the auditor's evaluations, his findings, his conclusions, his opinions, recommendations, his recommended plan for how to get this company back on track with corrective actions. But the actual facts that were gathered or the audit or perhaps independently of the audit, but that he relied on in coming to these conclusions would not be privileged. And so when the audit report, to the extent it attaches all the underlying data or all the surveys or whatever they are, that part would not be privileged. But the heart of the report, which was the auditor's opinions and recommendations, would be privileged.
Well, why would you ever want to have someone, let me give you an example. I'm running a pulp mill in Ketchikan, and I want to make certain that my machinery's working. I've got various gauges and devices and so on, but I want to make sure right out there at the outfall that it's working. So what I do is I hire an expert to come up and review my whole system and make sure it's working right. What he chooses to do is he goes down and every hour on the hour, maybe we've been checking once a week, every hour on the hour he goes down there, dips a little sample out, takes it out, runs it through his testing devices or some lab. Those are about as objective of facts as you can find, right? Now, if those objective facts that he has discerned in making up the report that I've asked him to do to make sure I am in compliance, if those are all available to you, why in the world would I ever hire a guy to go out and do anything other than give me his conjecture and recommendations, because that's the only thing that's going to be shielded? I don't think I would. Do you?
Mr. Chairman, the privilege, if the privilege is used to shield objective facts, it can be used to sweep up a lot of information that is very valuable in determining whether a corporation is in violation or whether it is causing injuries. So that is very valuable evidence in that regard. And to allow the privilege to shield that information
we felt that the interest in maintaining a credible enforcement program, in having evidence available when people do suffer property damage or injury, that was not information that should be shielded, that it was important information that should people who have a need to have access to it should be able to have access to it, but not to the auditor's thoughts about how he decided he was going to do this daily sampling or hourly sampling, and not to the auditor's conclusions that those samples in fact showed a violation or in fact showed disregard for keeping the machinery operating properly, or not his evaluation of those facts. That would be privileged, but the facts themselves would not be privileged.
You know, in that instance, if the facts weren't going to be privileged, I would never hire somebody to come in and do that. I would never put my company into a position where I would go out and do your investigative work for you so that I could find out how to better make my plant run, and then have that available to your enforcement personnel to come in and find me for having done that. That'd be totally counterproductive to the reason I went into it in the first place. I can understand how the other side of the same sword works. If, in fact, knowing that I've got major problems going on, I then employ this as a ruse to shield all of the objective facts that would have been there anyhow. Would have been on my gauges and my printouts and other things, I can understand how that would be a problem. But I don't believe any immunity is provided or a shield given to anything which your department does on their own in their normal investigative measures anyhow. I mean, that pipe and its outfall is available there 24 hours a day for your personnel to go out and check. You haven't been doing it. Now, I choose to do it for various reasons. Let's hope they're good. And as a consequence, I'm now shielded for the work that I paid for and I did. I'm not shielded from anything you people want. See what I'm getting at?
Mr. Chairman, I understand what you're getting at, but perhaps we have a disagreement in policy or in the purpose of the audit privilege. The purpose of the audit privilege is to encourage people to evaluate their own conduct and undertake activities to correct violations and prevent them. Most businesses have an incentive to do that anyways. They want to have safe workplaces, they want to reduce their insurance, they don't want to get cited. So we feel that those incentives are there already for people to evaluate their own conduct. This bill gives them additional incentives, but the administration did not feel that incentive should extend to the objective facts.
Sure. Senator Ellis, you had raised this question, and I got asking a bunch here. I didn't mean to turn to you. I should have earlier.
And, Mr. Chairman, I know you said you had to be gone by now. I wanted to tell you or remind you that you have a packet of amendments from me as well.
I do. I have yours, and I also have DEC's. Yeah, I think you have additional ones, don't you, John?
I have 12 here in a stack,
yeah.
Besides 7 and 8 that we're discussing now.
Well, I don't want to do that either. Thank you very much, Marie, by the way. Well, we have a motion pending at this point. Further discussion? Question? The objection is maintained, I'm sure.
Yes.
Senator Miller?
Yes. Senator Pennell? Yes. Senator Ellis? No. Yes, motion passes. We'll take up the rest of these amendments, I guess, at the next hearing. I had hoped to move it on, but I agree with you, John. We should give you an opportunity to do that.
Yes.
Only courteous to do so.
And I don't understand why we're handling it this way, actually, but there must be a good reason.
I wish I knew. I felt most of Senator Lehman's amendments were pretty much housekeeping stuff. Amendment 8 has not yet been passed, and we'll discuss that a little further, I'm sure, with Ms. Adair next, and then we'll turn to yours.
Of a lot of debate, and some of them are just things that would be rolled into a normal committee substitute by the staff.
We had been hoping
for the committee.
For that. the debate seems to go on between Senator Lehman's office, Department of Labor, and TEC, and they achieve some agreements, and then they're still debating others. And
but Hess can go home, right, because we eliminated them from all the other amendments.
That's my understanding.
Pardon? Hess is out of the bill. That amendment deleted them.
We eliminated.
That's my understanding, John.
Well, the crowd will fin.
The crowd will fin, yes.
Yes.
We're adjourned.